Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey, friends. Welcome to episode 552 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again this week by Chad Smart. And Chad, I guess we'll knock out any current modern day news and notes before we dig deep into this week's episode. But anything that you've seen that caught your attention? I know AEW had a couple of extended shows due to, I believe, the NBA basketball playoffs going on TNT and TBS, either or those stations. And I guess there's been a little bit of action with The Truth, or I guess he's not The Truth anymore. It's Ron Killings. Saw a pretty witty response from Naomi when it came to the fans chanting what on SmackDown on Friday night. But anything from your end that you've seen that has been news and noteworthy?
What did Naomi say?
So they're chanting what? She's in there confronting Tiffany Stratton, and the fans are chanting what while she's doing it. And she turns to them and says, "Bitch, you know what I'm saying," or "Bitch, you heard me," or something along those lines. And I think, you know, wrestling through the years, and we've talked about this before, it I think they're kind of veering away from it again, but maybe not. So scripted that, like, when talent is in the ring, sometimes they don't know how to react to a hostile crowd or a heckler, if you will. Comedians, we see, deal with that all the time. But sometimes they you know, get a little discombobulated or flustered. And Naomi's response was just spot on, and she just kept right into her thing. Tiffany maintained, you know, nobody broke character, if you will. I just thought it was an excellent response. And I guess we can talk about that as well as part of this this episode is, you know, when fans, I don't want to say hijack the show, but, you know, the what chant now has been, what, 20 plus years?
I was just going to say, I saw, I don't know if you watch Simon Miller on YouTube, he's with What Culture Wrestling, but he posted that August 16th, 2001 was the first time Steve Austin used what in a promo. So it's been almost 24 years that people have been annoying and need to get over it. I mean, and you think about it, like, there are, you know, fans today who weren't even alive when the what chant started.
Yes.
I mean, that would be like you and I, when we started watching wrestling, chanting for Chief J Strongbow and Pedro Morales.
You know, yeah. It's like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Really? Even, you know, I started watching in 83. I mean, that would have been going back 24 years. I'd go back into the 60s, guess the late 50s.
Like, oh, that Luthez. Yes. Yeah. What his catchphrase was, I don't know what.
Go Hackenschmidt, go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go
ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you had anything going on.
No, I'm not really. I mean, the AEW shows, I mean, I guess 4 hours. You know, we say for a pay-per-view is even long, but for a TV, for a weekly TV show is definitely too long. But I did like how AEW did like 2 hour Dynamite and then Collision. They stuck with kind of the same format. So when you put Adam Cole, the Bebe, and his Papa Non group at the end of the 4 hour block, at least you give me a reason to turn off a half hour early.
So when you say they did it as Dynamite and Collision, at the top of that third hour, did they go off the air and then come back and reset the set? Or do they have a different set and commentary team and all that?
They have a different commentary team. They don't have a different set, but they would run over and then they would like fade to black and then come right back up. And
oh, okay.
Which, yeah. So, I mean, it's like, you know, and I'm guessing they did it, one, because they have two different shows, but also ratings-wise, you know, like if you think back to the Attitude Era, you know, you had Raw and then you had Warzone.
Yeah.
They would do that so that they could, instead of averaging 2 hours as one show, you had 2 one-hour shows, so your ratings would be a little bit higher, so you could charge more for commercials. But, yeah, I don't know where I was going with this tangent, but the AEW shows are fine. But something that I've been meaning to bring up for the last few weeks, and this is something that I've always kind of wondered over the last few years, but now I have proof because social media exists. Bianca Belair, you realize her hair is not her hair.
Tell me you knew that.
I mean, I suspect that? It. I suspected, but oh, I had no proof. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. I am, you know, because she uses it in a match, uh-huh. Why haven't they done a stipulation where her challenger says she has to either remove the hair or the hair has to, you know, is a weapon and has to be.
Well, I think we as fans know that it's not real, but yeah. I think in storyline, it's her hair. I don't think it's, I don't think everyone's in on it. I think that they sell it as really being her hair.
Right. But the fact that she uses it as a weapon and leaves, you know, marks on someone, that should be, I mean, if Lex Luger can't use a forearm because it has an implanted steel rod.
Well, remember when Sherry had her hair like that for SummerSlam 89 and Brutus Beefcake cut it off. So maybe we bring Brutus the Barber back for a special.
Young, I mean, I'm Bear sure he's not busy.
What's that?
I'm sure he's not busy. Yeah.
Probably me. Maybe he'll be at the next Saturday night's main event.
Oh, so, you've heard the rumors for next Saturday night's main event, right?
I guess I haven't.
Well, it's in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Is the next one in Atlanta?
Mm-hmm. It's in July. It's going opposite AEW's All In.
That's right. It's AEW that's in Texas. Goldberg's last match, right?
That's the rumor, and that's the reason why Monday Night Raw happened this past week.
Well, we're less than a month away. Hey, speaking of Raw, are you happy after your little Y-E-E-T-S-U-C-K?
Yeet.
Yeet is over, well, at least for now. Oh, so you don't think, though, that they're going to put the belt on Goldberg?
Do I think they will? No. Would I be surprised if they did? No. So, I don't think the match, if that match happens, if the rumors are true, if that's going to be the match, I don't think the belt was needed.
Right. Yeah, 100%. To be
there. Yeah. You know, I know Big Keesh was not happy with the outcome. Sure. And
did he post? I didn't see anything.
I've seen a few comments from him that. Yeah. You know, Jay is more over, and back in his day, the guy that was over got the belt.
That's not true. Road Dogg would have been world champion.
That's what I've been saying for the last 2 months.
I see your point of view, and I still, you know, because it wasn't as if, you know, Demolition Axe went in there and beat Hulk Hogan and became the champion. Yeah. Like back in the day, that would have been unheard of, and I know you can't compare. It's not a fair comparison to say the Usos and Demolition are on the same as individuals, because they're both very, very solid tag teams. But I also think the Usos are better off as individuals than Axe or Smash were, or I guess we saw with Crush.
What do you mean? I mean, Crusher Khrushchev, Blacktop Bully, Payne Stewart, Repo Man.
But I still had trouble seeing Jay as anything beyond a tag team wrestler, even though he is wildly popular. Thanks to you, I have a box of the Heat cereal that I will be tasting and trying in the near future. But yeah, I didn't buy into it, even though I know millions of other people, fans, and people who are actually buying tickets and going to events and stuff did buy into it. So it's interesting that they did do the switch the way they did, as quickly as they did. I thought Jay would hold on to the belt a little longer. Is he going to fall into that category of being a transitional champion, not unlike the Iron Sheik or Sergeant Slaughter, Jack Swagger, you know, those guys that
Well,
held it one time and just for, you know, a couple of months?
yeah, I would say to me, that's not a transitional champion when the title goes right back to the same person, which is, I guess, my bigger
That's
issue
true. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
with this whole situation is, the title goes back to Goldberg or it's a Freudian
Do
slip
not wish
back to
that into
Gunther.
existence.
Yeah. Back to Gunther. The speculation rumor, which is way out there, would be, Cody's going to dethrone Cena to get the title back. And to me, it's those stories aren't interesting when you're just trading back and forth like that. Like, especially given the amount of contenders that you could have. So
Well,
I,
and
you know,
this will tie into our conversation in a little bit, but I'm going to plant the seed now. That was 80s Jim Crockett Promotions. You know, Flair would win it, lose it, win it back, lose it, win it back, lose it until he eventually left the company. But that formula worked in that territory at that time. But like you said today, with the level of contenders that are out there, I don't know if that worked.
Yeah, well, and I would say, it's presentation maybe as well. Like I've said, like WWE wrestlers don't really do anything necessarily that I don't like, but when it comes to presentation, which company will I watch more? WWE has always been my second or third favorite promotion, and I think it has to do with the way matches are formulated. It's a weird thing, but to go to your Flair comment, it's also the time that we live in now, where before Flair would have the title you would get him a pay-per-view match every quarter or Clash of the Champions match. Same way, Hogan wasn't on weekly television. And now that you have, the weekly television is what we got in, as pay-per-views back in the 80s and early 90s. So the chances of a title changing hands, I guess, is more likely. Thankfully, not as likely as it was in 1999 when the title seemed to change hands every week. But does that make sense?
Yeah,
Or
it does. And
kind
I,
of random?
you know, and I think that you have specifically talked about it in the past, is how the Attitude Era is remembered very fondly by a lot of people. Obviously, the Monday Night War, and we saw, you know, those pay-per-view quality matches then lead over onto, you know, because back before Nitro, you know, Monday Night Raw, the main event of the first Monday Night Raw was The Undertaker versus Damian Demento. So we knew who was going to win that match, but then we start getting some Steve Austin versus The Undertaker, or The Rock versus Mick Foley, or Mankind. So, you know, on one hand, it improved the quality of weekly television, but in the same process, I think if we look at this historically and look back on it, it did kind of paint companies into a corner where you had to keep that level of excellence of people going, and then you do run the risk of overexposure. You're putting two quality guys against each other instead of that enhancement talent versus, you know, in today's era, Cody Rhodes versus enhancement. You know, we would never see that on Raw, and I don't think, I know they report, or they were reporting superstars and airing it online. I don't know if they still do that, but and you said that AEW still kind of does something.
Yeah, I think Collision has more of the enhancement matches. Collision definitely is a step down from Dynamite because, and especially now in the last, I don't know, 6 to 9 months, where Collision has taped more than they've aired live, I believe. But, one of the problems with current WWE booking is there are no clean finishes. you know, it seems like every match he has to have a run in or a DQ or something, because for whatever reason, if they can't decide, okay, who has to win this match? You know, if you're going to put Cody for, like, you know, this coming week on Raw, it's going to be Cena versus R-Truth, apparently, or Ron Killings. Well, Killings isn't going to win the title, but he just came back. So is he going to lose, or is there going to be some shenanigans that take place? Whereas, you know, over in AEW, they don't do the disqualification as much, but they do kind of rely on time limit draws to be more of their, like, if one person, they don't want to win, they'll just go the full 30 minutes, which, you know, it, if done sparingly, is fine. But when it becomes kind of like the norm, yeah, then it's just like, oh, okay, this is what you're doing again this week. So
since you brought up Cena, how do you think, we're about 6 months away from the end of 2025, so you will be done. I believe that December Saturday night's main event at I think it's at Madison Square Garden. I
thought it was in Boston.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is. I don't know why I was thinking MSG, but anyway, do you keep the belt on Cena till the end? Does he walk away with it and quote unquote ruin wrestling, or is he going to turn face here before the end of this run?
I think he'll turn face. I don't think he needs the title, especially if he's going to turn face and kind of do it. If you're going to do a redemption story to send him out. And so does that mean, you know, given the amount of time that he has, I would say maybe he loses at SummerSlam due to shenanigans, and then has time to reflect on the past year and call out The Rock for being a balding bitch and not showing up and costing him his retirement storyline. I don't know. But yeah, I don't see Cena leaving with the title. And I don't think you leave the title on him until the last show and have him get beat there. And, you know, they did it with the Summer of Punk when Punk's contract was up and he left with the title. But Punk had to come back, you know, and I don't see Cena coming back after this year. So,
right. Yeah. At least not for us.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. We'll talk more about those kinds of events happening as we count down towards the end of 2025. This week, though, we're going to also talk more about our fandom as kids and teenagers and then even into our adult years. A few weeks ago, we talked about why do we watch wrestling. We asked that question, why do people watch wrestling? And actually got a handful of responses on the My123Cents Facebook page. So if you haven't already, check that out, follow along, and then join the My123Cents Facebook group and weigh in and be part of the conversations that are going on there. But Chad, when you first started watching wrestling, and I think you said before that you started watching somewhere around the first WrestleMania, which was in 1985, so about 40 years you've been watching. You remember, did you have a favorite wrestler at that point? Or who hooked you to become a wrestling fan?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about how I think before I got into WWF, I was watching JCP, obviously on WTBS. Mid-South, I think Mid-South was probably like my go-to, because I remember it airing like during the week on, because we had the satellite dish, and I don't remember what station I was watching it from or if it was like the feed. But I remember watching that and World Class. I'm trying to, you know, my memory with how things are is very suspect at my aging time, and to compare with how I feel today, and because I want to say, you know, when I say the Four Horsemen, you know, I was really into them, but was I as a kid, or is that just as I've gotten older? You know, like,
right.
I mean, I was once Luger came in, like, because I remember also watching Championship Wrestling from Florida and seeing when the Luger showed up for the first time, and But I don't remember like Kevin Sullivan and Purple Haze and all that with fond memory or any tangible memory. So I don't know where storylines were at the time, but I would say, you know, Jimmy Snuka, I remember, was a big one. I think when watching, getting into WWF. You know, I've said Hogan, I only like cheered for him at WrestleMania 1, and that's because I hated Piper. So I don't really consider myself a Hulkamaniac, I don't think. I'm trying to think of who else. I like the Blade Runners in Mid-South, Eddie Gilbert. So yeah, I don't know who actually. I don't know, maybe the Rock and Roll Express. So yeah, there's a whole lot. We could probably just tape up a dartboard and let me throw a dart, and that person will take credit. So,
well, I've talked about it ad nauseum. If you're watching, see the poster behind me that Chad actually got this was a couple years ago. It was Kerry Von Erich for me, and even today, 40 plus years later, he's still, you know, when I do a Mount Rushmore, I don't do like a Mount Rushmore of the greatest. I do a Mount Rushmore of my favorites, and he is still on there, and it's that nostalgia. And I don't know if, you know, his untimely passing at age 33, you know, he's been gone more than 30 years, if that helped preserve his, you know, the fandom that I had. And I know people talk about the demons, and we've both seen and reviewed the Iron Claw movie, you know, that's all well documented. But, you know, there was just something about that time and growing up in the 80s and just, you know, being captured into the whole wrestling machine. You know, before even I was watching the WWF, I was watching World Class and wrestling at the Chase, not a St. Louis specifically, and the Von Erichs were featured on both of those programs. So I think that's part of the nostalgia for me. But, you know, as I got older, and I also hated Rowdy Roddy Piper, and I hated Ric Flair. And at some point, and I'm going to guess I was in high school, that changed for me with Ric Flair specifically. And I can remember cheering for him and rooting for him against guys like Sting. And, you know, I liked Sting, but now I'm 17, 18 when, you know, he's wrestling Sting and losing the title. Sting, I think, was probably marketed more for that teen or that preteen crowd, those kids that would paint their faces and want the action figures and whatnot. And Flair was a more, you know, serious, if you will, wrestler. So I think that's probably about the time. I mean, it's not that I disliked Sting, but I liked Flair. I liked the shenanigans, if you will, that the heel was playing and being part of back in the day. So how were you with Flair? Because at some point you turned around and argued, came around to him too, or were you always a Flair fan? You mentioned the horse.
Yeah, like I said, I want to say that I always liked Flair, but I probably didn't. But I think I've liked him longer than I probably didn't, so it just has merged into it. Because I'm sure at Clash of Champions 1, I was cheering for Sting. And, yeah, I don't know if it, you know, when the Attitude Era came around, talk about the cool heel coming into play. But to me, Flair was always the cool heel. And, you know, and I like Barry Windham from his time in WWF. And so when he joined the Horsemen, you know, Tully and Arn, just, I think we're just solid hands. And I can't say, you know, and the fact that they were 25 years old and looked 52, it just was weird. So yeah, I mean, I want to say that I enjoyed the Horsemen the entire time, but I can't give you any specific examples of what turned me around to them, or I think it was just Flair, you know, like I said, Flair's got the charisma and the promos, and yeah.
Is that somebody knocking at your door?
No, I apologize. Microphone apparently is like super sensitive today. And so it's like in the next apartment over. So if you hear a young child crying, I'm not kidnapping anyone. It is not
I
my
was just,
kid. He's
I thought, well, maybe you ordered something or so, you got the
No,
mail
it's
and they
yeah, I
wanted
think
to
someone's
respond.
hanging something on the wall, and my microphone just seems to be picking up everything in a 1 block radius today.
So for me, as you were talking, I was kind of going in my mind, and again, it's those early high school years for me. I was in high school from 87 to 91. And so that those first 3 years of high school, it was the Horsemen. It was Barry Windham, it was Lex Luger, Ric Flair, Kelly and all those guys. And I did not like them. I liked Dusty Rhodes and Sting and Nikita Koloff and the baby faces of JCP, if you will. And then, like I said, at some point, it all kind of switched around for me. And I think it probably was going into my senior year. I remember, Sid Vicious is a member of the Horsemen there. And that match, I believe it was in February of 91. They're in the cage and Sid lifts Brian Pillman up and hits his head on top of the cage and then power bombs him. That was such a cool presentation. The one and only action figure, WCW action figure that I had bought was the Sid Vicious figure. So again, I think that awe factor of these wrestlers that maybe catch your attention and then they stand out to you. And even if they are the bad guy, if you will, they have that fan base. And I think, and then when he, when like they, when Sid, because I can't remember, I believe it was Sid first that went to the WWF that summer of 91. And then I can remember watching, we were on vacation in Florida, and I was in the hotel room while everybody else was on the beach, and I was watching WCW Saturday Night, and they ran a crawl across the bottom that said, due to a breakdown in contract negotiations, Ric Flair is being stripped of the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. And I thought at that point, I thought it was all still part of the show. And then lo and behold, a week or two later, Bobby Heenan is standing there holding the big gold belt. And that's when I really remember Ric Flair is the man. He's coming to the WWF. He's going to be here. He's going to, take out Hulkamania. Because by that point, after 4 or 5 years of Hulkamania, I was over. And so I wanted to see something different and not the Ultimate Warrior. And again, I'm a man now. I'm 18. I'm over the vitamins and the face paint and all that stuff and wanted that serious education. And Flair, for me, since then, has been like consistently at the top of my list. And I say that to transition into this part of it now is at what point do wrestlers. And now that we have social media, we see their lives 24/7. We know what's going on. They say things, sometimes stupid things. At what point do you factor in a wrestler's or anyone? But I know for the sake of this argument, we're talking wrestling. Does someone's politics or his preferences, their attitude, their behaviors, does that influence you and your family? As you're watching, does it make you not want to watch a movie or watch a go back and watch a match? I mean, obviously, the extreme case, guys like Chris Benoit, not sitting here to put it because he at one time was one of my favorites. I really enjoyed him when he came to the WWF and did this thing there. But at what point do you change your tune or change your outlook toward a wrestler?
Yeah, I mean, and it is a big issue out, just outside of wrestling as well. And I would say, for me personally, I don't think there's anything that would make me like not want to watch a match or a movie or anything, because I feel like separating the art from the artist is the big issue. And I mean, I say that, but I'm sure there is a circumstance that would be so heinous, and you would think that murder would be that in that line, but so far it has not been. But I think it's a weird thing, because I don't with social media and people saying things that, you know, you may not agree with. And I think as a society, we have to learn that difference of opinions are valuable. Not saying they're right or wrong, but right. saying like, if everyone agrees on everything, then there's no way society will evolve, because you have to have a difference at some point to throw in a new, otherwise you just become mindless. I don't want to necessarily say sheep, because it's not like you're following someone, but if you're all thinking the same thing, there's no, you know, well, what about, you know, some, you know, this different thought. But if someone says something that I don't agree with on social media, I probably just roll my eyes and move on and don't respond, don't engage, because I, a sensible adult, I'd like to think. So for me, it's not, that won't affect me, but when that becomes a pattern, I guess, of, I'm just going to use Flair as an example, just because, you know, it's a solid example.
Yeah,
I like Ric Flair as a wrestler. I think he should have retired when he lost the match with Shawn Michaels. I understand why he didn't, you know,
you because think, let me cut you off for just a second. Yeah. Did he go on too long? Should he have retired even before that? Should he have even done the 2001 return to WWE after the invasion?
I mean, I didn't have any problems with him coming back.
I didn't.
You know, yeah, I was fine, because I think he was still putting on. I mean, he wasn't putting on the matches that he was in the 80s, but
sure.
he wasn't embarrassing himself.
Right. Yeah.
But I can understand when that's your entire life and that's your livelihood and you're used to it for 30 years to just go, okay, I'm done and I'm going to sit at home. And especially given the lifestyle that Flair was leading, or like, you know, it doesn't work that way. But now with, you know, and again, with social media, if social media didn't exist, I'm sure my opinion of Ric Flair would be different than it is, because I wouldn't know what he was like in his real life or thing, you know. And I mean, we joked about Rikishi, you know, complaining about Jey Uso earlier. Rikishi's getting that same way, where it's like, again, these people are in the wrestling industry and have been a long time. You should know how it, I'd say, how it works.
Right.
So again, you can criticize, but if you do it in kayfabe, that's one thing. But to do it and be like, oh, you know, I think this should be this way or this, you know, it's like, whatever. And then, yeah. And then Flair, you know, again, I think even just the way he acts in public is not something that I don't want to say idolized, because I don't think anybody should be idolized, but it's not like something that should be encouraged, or it's just like, dude, you're a 70-year-old man. Like, you have to grow up at some point.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been the transition, I guess, for me with him as well, as far as being a fan. I agree 100%. 2008, the match with Shawn Michaels. That 2008? Yeah.
Yeah.
Should have been it. He did the TNA thing for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know some people kind of like, oh, what? Because it was a wrestling retirement. But I think that particular retirement was probably the best send-off a company has given.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be curious to see what happens in December with Cena. But, you know, Ric Flair's retirement was hard to do. The match, the next night on Raw, you know, the accolades and everything. And, you know, 2022 rolls around, the time that Jeff Jarrett, you know, they all promoted and did well with Ric Flair's last match. It is what it is. Did it tarnish anything for me? No, because I think once you rang that bell of coming back in TNA, the whole WWE thing was already kind of soiled, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's kind of like with Sting. I hope it's Sting, and I think he will, you know, in his mid-60s at this point. Yeah. I think AEW did a great job with that story and building him up as it being his last match. And he did kind of pass that torch on to Darby and the others that were in there. So it's like, can you fault the guy for wanting to make a buck or get back in the ring and do something that he, because, you know, on a much smaller scale, I did Strive Pro Wrestling, you know, ring announcing for 8 years, almost every month, sometimes twice a month, you know, on, like I said, a much smaller scale. But there are times that I miss it. And I could see where you want to be in front of that crowd and want to do things and be a part of that. So I don't fault Flair for that. But I think, again, like you said, it's the social media thing. It's the constant complaining about Charlotte not getting this push for that push, which I get part of that too as a dad myself. I would say that I don't think I would be public about it. I may bitch about it behind closed doors. But the other thing with him, and the thing that really in the last month has kind of put me over the edge with him, is the insults thrown at JR. You know, calling him attention, you know, something about getting attention when he was talking about his cancer. And you know, as someone who has then, what, a week later came out and said that he had skin cancer, I mean, it just, something, and again, maybe, you know, I know he's had issues, Nature Boy has had issues in the past with substances and stuff like that. Maybe, I don't know, I don't want to judge too much, but I think at some point, you know, you think before you tweet or think before you put it out on social media or do whatever. And it just does not leave a good look. And I know, and I jump in and look at the comments, and probably 95% of them are kind of berating him. But, you know, these are fans and followers of him, and then he's putting stuff out there like that. So I think people get it. And it does, in my opinion, it is kind of tarnished legacy, kind of same with Hulk Hogan and his constant exaggeration and, you know, late. And maybe they're not, like, again, I don't know what kind of issues these guys are facing from their head trauma. And think maybe it's all part of that. I don't know. So I don't want to judge too harshly, but I also find myself rolling my eyes a lot more when I see Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan on social media. You know, and for me, guys like Stone Cold Steve Austin have moved up the rankings, if you will, in my head. And today, you know, people are like, who's your favorite wrestler? And I'm like, well, today, I feel also kind of weird at 52 saying, Cody Rhodes is my favorite. He's not, but I like Cody Rhodes. I don't have a problem.
It's Tiffany Stratton, let's be honest.
What's that?
I said, it's Tiffany Stratton, let's be honest. Or actually, I should say it's Nikki Bella. You're excited for her comeback and the rumors of Brie coming in with her. So,
you know, I just watched today and I want to be entertained. And yeah, there are some that I like more than others, you know, for different reasons. You know, I've never been a quote unquote work rate, you know, at one point I did. So I'm not obviously looking at that. I'm just looking to entertain and seeing what's out there and having fun with it. But, you know, gun to my head right now, if somebody walks in here and says, who's your favorite wrestler? I don't know that I could tell you. I mean, I'm really enjoying Ron Killings or R-Truth. And maybe I've jumped on that bandwagon and I've always liked him, but the recent turn of events with him has endeared him to a lot of people. I usually throw back and say, you know, Steve Austin or Ric Flair are my, you know, all-time favorites. Does that ever come up with you? Do you talk to other people about wrestling outside of, because actually, people find out that I have a podcast. I actually ran into somebody at work this week who was doing research for the podcast we were doing at work and found that I have this podcast that he's a wrestling fan. So, we do start having those conversations with quote unquote civilians. And so it does become a thing. Do you talk about wrestling outside of this podcast?
I don't talk to people outside of this podcast. So, no, I mean, I've talked a little bit here and there, but not any serious conversations. And so, other than saying like, oh, did you go to the show, or whatnot. There's no, I couldn't tell you the last real in-depth wrestling conversation that I had with somebody that wasn't you. So, because nobody that I know follow that I hang out with, you know, friend-wise, punches wrestling. So
that's kind of a weird roller coaster too, because when I was in high school, I'll go back to middle school, high school years is when really I would say probably I was in fifth grade when I really looked into it. And then by junior high, and there were guys that, you know, we would talk about it, and, you know, but I didn't have like a dedicated wrestling buddy, if you will, that watched pay-per-views and did all that kind of stuff until my friend that I've talked about before, who had the satellite dish, and so we would go to his house and he would record MSG channel, watch those shows and that kind of stuff. But and then we became roommates in college, so we went to a couple of live shows at the Showman Center and paid at SEMO. And then after that, you know, we kind of lost touch in the rest of college and didn't really have, you know, I watched them still. I bought the magazine. And then I drugged my wife. I think we talked several times about that 1995 TV taping in St. Louis that ended up going like 4 hours that she had no idea. I didn't know at that time what we were getting ourselves into. So it's all kind of evolved and gone from there. And then I've moved several different states. I worked in Alabama for a minute and did some camera work for an independent company there. But again, I didn't talk to, you know, I was very introverted, so I didn't talk to anybody at those shows. In Alabama or in Indiana, I lived there for almost 5 years, and people were wrestling fans, and we would talk. We'd go watch the pay-per-views at Buffalo Wild Wings, but never went to any live events. And then moving down here, I met you, Travis Yates, Matt English, Mike Kahn. There was a handful of you guys that KAA and that KAK and no relation to Tony or Nick or Tejo. But you know, it was a different environment, a different world. And you really, I mean, I know we still chat with Travis every once in a while, very, very rarely, you know, social media, may talk to Matt or Mike, but you know, you and I kind of kept this, nerdiness going for 20 plus years now. So beyond that, you know, I have a couple of coworkers that watch and will occasionally say, hey, did you see what happened with blah blah blah? But again, I'm not sitting down and watching. Of course, my connection with Stride and some of the indie guys that are still here, Tyler, Jay Spade, and some of those guys will talk and maybe run. But I'm not, again, it's kind of, you know, that my friend group of 15 other people, none of them, although when I was watching Royal Rumble on my phone, we were a weekend getaway, all the guys kind of flocked on my phone. There is a guy in our group, Bill, that watched it occasionally. But yeah, it's different being a wrestling fan than being an adult, I think. And there is still, I think, almost that stigma. That...
Yeah. I mean, apparently at my last job, there were people that were wrestling fans that, but I never got to talk to them because working remotely, you don't have conversations like you would, you know, if we'd been in the office and I got to know them better, probably would have come up. But,
sure.
And there is still that stigma of, oh, you watch wrestling. Oh, you know, and even though wrestling is more popular, I don't want to say more popular in terms of, I guess, pure popularity, but the acceptance of, I think we've kind of moved away from the, you know, that's fake, right? Which you still get, but it seems to be less, which after 25 years of kayfabe being dead, you know, hopefully people that are watching understand it is a, you know, a scripted program now, and that you're watching for the athleticism or just the characters themselves. You're not watching because you think, oh my gosh, is Goldberg going to be able to beat Gunther? Really? You know, he's coming out of retirement. It's like, dude, it's Goldberg's already hurt himself 3 times. Shut up.
I wondered if he had
some. But yeah, it's still, you know, I'm sure you've seen the memes where it's like, I sit close at wrestling matches for the view, and then it cuts to like the back end shots of all the female wrestlers, and it's like okay, that's still there, but or you know, it's like, oh, I watch AEW, and then it's here's John Moxley bleeding, here's Darby Allin bleeding, here's Darby Allin setting someone on fire with a flamethrower, you know, and you're like, why are you watching? You know, so again, and you know, we've said it before, to a wrestling fan, you don't have to explain it. To a non-wrestling fan, you can't explain it. It's just, you like it or you don't. So,
yeah. And one thing I found interesting too, like when I was a kid, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, when we were growing, like we would go to WWF or, you know, they were NWA sanctioned matches. I don't know, might have been Central States, actually, but they would always, being in St. Louis, we had wrestling, live wrestling a lot. And I went back, and it's crazy how many times the WWF actually would come to St. Louis in a year. Month, sometimes a couple times a week. But anyway, there was a group of us that, you know, our dads would all take us to the matches. And then, like I said, all those guys, all those kids kind of outgrew it. And I didn't. And it wasn't until then, like the late 90s, the Attitude Era specifically, that they got back into it. And they were, you know, I'd run into them at something and they'd be like, oh man, did you see the NWO and what they did, you know? And so it was interesting. And now I'm sure none of those guys, they may know who, you know, certain wrestlers are, but it's, you know, again, that, I don't want to say cyclical, but it does sometimes feel like it is. And I don't know, again, I don't know that it will ever see the popularity in terms of people watching eyeballs. I know money, monetarily, it's business is booming, but I don't know that we'll ever see an era again where it was such a, so woven into pop culture. I think both WCW and WWF at the time had superstars on the cover of TV Guide. I mean, that was huge. That TV Guide was in almost every home in America back in the 80s and 90s. So, I don't see us picking up TV Guide, you know, probably it's not anywhere what it used to be, but, you know, with John Moxley or John Cena or Cody Rhodes or Darby Allin, those might go to AEW. But I don't see that happening again, at least not in any time soon. And I know a lot of the WWE guys pop up, our family, they pop up here and there. There were a couple that I can't remember who it was or what they were doing, but they were at some national big time event.
Yeah. Well, they just had a big Netflix presentation for their like rest of the 25 year.
Yeah. And it might have been
a bunch of WWE people were there.
Yeah. So, you know, we see them at things like that, but I often wonder, like, how many, like, I feel like Hulk Hogan, obviously, everyone knew back in the 80s, Andre the Giant, people knew who he was. I think to a lesser extent, really, I'd say those were the two probably most recognized. Then you went into like the Steve Austin era where you show up at something and you're like, oh, did you see something with Steve Austin? People talk like Randy, you know, though, like, oh, the Macho, you know, at graduation, you know, I work at a college graduation. Yeah. I said, oh, cool, they're playing Macho Man's theme song. And people knew what I was talking about. So there are those that kind of transcended and still today are part of that pop culture conversation. But maybe we're too close to it. Other than John Cena, I don't see anyone kind of sticking out as a, and I'm not counting Logan Paul, obviously, but that kind of stand out as that wrestler, pop culture individual. Rock too, but he's not actively. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's weird because, like, you know, MJF was in Iron Claw, small role. He's in Happy Gilmore too. If you watch the trailer, he's prominently in probably at least a good fourth of the trailer. I don't know how much, you know, how that will translate to the actual film, like how many speaking lines or how much of a focus will be. But and you know, Liv Morgan was just off to go shoot a film. Just came out that. What's her face? I can't think of her name. The one night Naomi attacked Jay Cargill. She's just got cast in a film. You know, like I think there's more acting ability or acting opportunities now, but they don't seem to be as high profile as, say, the Scorpion King was when The Rock first joined. And obviously, you know, different time frame, so much more content to consume. So even if something is big, if there's a big role, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be seen by a lot of people.
That's what I was going to say, because you mentioned Scorpion, and obviously 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, you know, we looked forward to those summer blockbusters. We would go to the movies and actually count down and look forward to. And now everything is almost instantaneously at the touch of your fingers. You have the right streaming service. So it will be interesting to see like what happens. Yeah. I know that I haven't seen the trailer for it, but I knew that things that I saw, I guess, in the picture of the pen. I can't remember who he's with, but he posted on himself. Anyway, you know, it is an interesting sidebar of the content that's out there, because like you said, not only do we have movie theaters and a big screen movies, but there's a lot that's coming straight to you. Do those get the
Well, and I, you know, I would say too that you can't, and you know, this is the problem with WWE over the last few years, is you can't produce a mainstream talent. What I mean by that is Hogan, you know, launched the Rock and Wrestling promotion with Cyndi Lauper, but he had that charisma and the presentation to go outside WWF. The Rock came along. You know, I mean, The Rock and Steve Austin, we were top two guys in the Attitude Era. Austin really didn't translate to the mainstream as much as obviously The Rock has, you know, and Austin has a line of films and TV appearances. And you know, he seems to be content with his ranch and doing what the stuff that he does. So it's not like he's out there trying to be, you know, to follow The Rock. I don't think Roman Reigns has the charisma to bring people in from the outside to watch wrestling. As much as you want to promote him, and as well as he did the Tribal Chief character, I just don't see it, you know, appealing to non-wrestling fans. And same with AEW right now. You know, Moxley isn't going to bring people in. I don't think Darby will bring Hangman Page. They're like, they're not. And this isn't meant to be a criticism of them, but they're just not mainstream attractions, I guess, for lack of a better word. Like, they'll appeal to wrestling fans. And if you get people to give them a chance and watch, they may win them over, but they're not going to look at them and say, and be captivated right from, you know, within the first 30 seconds.
Yeah. And I think part of it too,
I mean, and real quick, I mean, you look back at, you know, in the 80s, Ric Flair, like we said, you and I, big fans, Flair wasn't transcending JCP or the NWA, you know, even when he was appearing on Learning the Ropes and whatnot. But, you know, he wasn't getting the Sports Illustrated cover, even though he was arguably a better wrestler than Hogan.
So it was in that instance, you know, because Flair had later said on his podcast, you know, they asked why we didn't get Hogan Flair at WrestleMania. Again, you and I are hardcore. We're buying the magazine, we're watching Saturday Night, we're doing all these things. The penetration that JCP had wasn't as old as WCW by that point, wasn't what it obviously became. And Ric Flair going to the WWF, a lot of people didn't know he was. I was surprised to hear Mick Foley talk about this. You know, as Cactus Jack, he was in WCW, he was in ECW. I thought that's why, and I think, you know, and this could be a topic for a whole other podcast, you know, changing that in my mind, why wouldn't you have Cactus Jack
in
doing this? Instead turning him in, and I went back and read and listened to the Mankind podcast where he talks about the thing. And it's genius on Vince McMahon and WWE creative part of creating this new character And, you know, how many people didn't realize at the time? Like you said earlier, you didn't realize that Bianca Belair, both are
Yeah,
ponytail is a human. And there were people that didn't know, which again was global, but that Mankind was Cactus Jack, you know, wrestling Van Hammer and Abdullah the Butcher and Sting, you know, a year and a half earlier.
I remember it took maybe a few weeks before my cousin and I were like, wait, Gold Dust is Dustin Rhodes, like, you know, and Raven is Johnny Polo, like,
yeah. And I wonder too, you know, because those were gimmicks that the ones that were like very early. I was on those message boards all the time, so I knew Gold Dust or Dustin was coming in. Was Gold Dust. Somebody leaked it or, you know, reported it, and so I kind of expected that. But I do wonder if the internet was around and as popular as it is today.
Yeah,
social media specifically, when Flair made the jump to WWE, would it have been a bigger deal? I do think wrestling, because, and I'm not throwing shade, but I don't think AEW would be as known as it is today without the benefits of
it. Oh, no. Yeah, because the Bullet Club wouldn't be known.
What's that?
The Bullet Club wouldn't be known
right.
in America as well as it is without the internet.
So, or as many bulbs as the internet does have, there's obviously some.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to piggyback off that thought real quick. Like, even the internet popularity is distortion through reality, you know, because something can look really popular on the internet, but you realize it's just a giant echo chamber, you know, and you step out of that echo chamber, no one's like, what are you, you know, I don't. I mean, I look at it with music. And it's like, oh, this person's really huge. And like, I've never seen anything about this person online whatsoever. And even back in our day, and I'm just saying, throwing this out because it's in my head and I have to get it out, is like, you know, we're the MTV generation. We remember dial-in TV, Motley Crue, Home Sweet Home. They had to change the rules for how long a video could be on the top 10 because it was on like the top one for like 3 months straight. You would think that song is a huge song for Motley Crue. It is not a top 40 hit. I think it peaked at number 83. It wasn't getting radio play, but it was getting video play. So again, to the people watching MTV, it was huge. To the people that just listened to the radio, it was nothing. So I think there's a huge topic here to discuss more with like perception versus reality. So
and we're almost an hour into this one, but yeah, I do like that idea. And maybe in the next couple of weeks, we can sit down and hammer something out along those lines. Because like you said, without the internet, you know, we don't know Bullet Club or some of those other groups. And I would be curious to see how the internet would have impacted the attitude era, you know, with social media. Because we're just getting into the internet, and that's where Eric Bischoff was getting the results to spoil on Nitro, because people were able to post it and email it or whatever. And a year, 5 years earlier, you know, we're in 1990, nobody was a smartphone.
I mean, ECW had an event called Cyber something. I can't remember the exact name, but it was like a gathering for the internet fans of ECW. Like that's how they, because again, without the internet, would ECW have been popular? You know?
Yeah, I like that. We'll definitely tackle that one in the next few weeks. Talking about that. Anything you want to say before we wrap up for this week's episode?
Totally off topic, but I will just say that I recently read Johnny B. Bad, or I should say Mark Marrow's book, From Bad 2Ds to Good. It's an interesting book. I'd recommend checking it out if you have a chance. Learned a lot about Marrow that I did not know, like the fact that he burnt down his house when he was 5 years old. So awesome. But yeah, and it's a good positive story. So maybe you can have him come speak at your college sometime with
I've actually thought about that, believe it or not. Yeah, and hell of a salesman if you get the book. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you for listening and or watching, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.